Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
This is Bill Rayner, back with you again in the final run-up to Election Day, which has been a remarkable chop and change of party personalities and poll results. I have with me today my good friend and Grey Power colleague, Mati Marinovich, a true son of the West, who will join me later in the program to talk rubbish. Not to join the current political election dialogue, but to share thoughts on some current issues impacting on the senior community. Back on the election scene, we're hearing promises of lavish expenditure in an incredible range of areas. New trains and trams all over the place, wonderful benefits for students, even pregnant women who are going to get free dental care. $30 million for the Harbour Bridge Skypath, and the regions will be booming. One-way bridges back on the extinction list. Nothing yet for seniors, lost in the political mist as usual. Not even a pick-up on the leaky homes repair finance problems I highlighted in our last session. As Jacinda and Bill bat back and forth and Winston scoots around the edges, I wonder why in a small country like New Zealand we have to do this. We all know each other, and all our problems are very clear and generic. They are not a matter of deep political difference with party positions, but just a matter of degree in getting to a common-sense solution. Why don't we have an MNP cabinet with all parties represented and just get on with sorting out things without this nonsensical political party debate, purely focused on which party's going to be top dog? Share the bone around with the best people from each party sitting at the cabinet table making the core decisions. The German government does exactly that with the three major parties all in cabinet and national government. Very wise and effective people, the Germans. We could learn from them. After all, that's where our MMP system basically came from initially. The broadcasting rules say we can't get too political or rude on air, so I'll shift direction and highlight the shameful lack of focus the council and the government have on our national and city heritage. New Zealand and Auckland were founded almost 180 years ago with the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. We all know about the treaty and the Maori involvement in the signing, the celebrations of Waitangi Day with a major Maori presence and cultural overtone. We're all very aware the long ongoing process of settling claims for issues arising from the treaty signed all that time ago, eight generations back. That is entirely appropriate, but what is wrong is the lack of recognition that there were in fact two groups signing the treaty. And while the Maori involvement and rangatira involved are remembered and highlighted in our joint heritage, the other partner, the Crown and the Pākehā community, are essentially forgotten. The signatory for the Crown, Queen Victoria, and the people of Great Britain, the main source of Pākehā New Zealanders, the Tangata Tiriti, the treaty partners, hardy people who travel around the world to settle with the Maori, joined by a sprinkling of other settlers from Europe and South China, who provide the values-based core dynamics and hard work necessary for the building of the modern society and economy we have today, was Captain William Hobson of the Royal Navy. He was tasked by the government of Queen Victoria to negotiate with the tribal chiefs in New Zealand to bring the country into the British imperial domain. Captain Hobson died 175 years ago on September the 10th, 1842, and is buried in the original city cemetery in Simon Street in the heart of our city. But where are the fanfares, editorials and the ceremonies recognising the 175th anniversary of the death of one of our nation's founding fathers? The man who agreed to move the country's capital to Auckland at the request of the Ngāti Whātua chief Te Kauau, keen for protection from Ngāpuhi. There aren't any, which is something of a disgrace for both the council and the government, and symptomatic of the current approach to valuing our Pākehā heritage. The cemetery itself has for many years been in a decrepit and largely uncared for state, a jungle full of rats and homeless people sleeping under Grafton Bridge. Very recently, the Waitemata Local Board, assisted by a small group of volunteers, began the formidable task of restoring the cemetery, making considerable progress in tidying up the worst parts of the historic place. The government has been asked through Maggie Barry, Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, to provide a small amount of funding and to share a joint venture project with the councils to rapidly complete the project. Both showing the respect to our pioneer forefathers buried there, in particular Captain Hobson, and to create an attractive inner city park. No response yet, but hopefully an election goodie still to come. It has to happen. And now before we get into the nitty-gritty of rubbish, disappearing rest homes and more leaky home problems with Mutty, a music break with Foster and Allen, with Farewell to Derry, a song reflecting on the leaving of Ireland faced by so many of our ancestors, including our Captain William Hobson, leaving his home in Wicklow to die in Auckland, New Zealand, 175 years ago.
Poor wandering man, since time began, has yearned for native soil. So sorely grieves the man who leaves his homeland by the fire, to preach the word, face battle's danger, praise the Lord and serve the stranger. Day by day they sail away and bid farewell to Derry. Sweet Coghill, remembered still, the noblest of this clan, in the dawning day of Christian sway, life exiled from this land. Though kind the Scot and high his calling, he ne'er forgot till life's shades falling. Boyhood scenes, hope grows so green, and sad farewell to death. In later days, when battles blazed, engulfed lands large and small, our reckless men left foils sweet land to answer bugle's call, left babes and wives for wars, for glory, and gave their lives for all. Glory, wanting jobs, they took their bobs and bade farewell to Derry. And still they leave so soon to grieve for foil and friends and home, nor gold nor fame e'er break the claim of the place from which they're on. The water side, the flowing river, the bog and craggan haunt forever. Wandering ones, the love-torn sons, who bid farewell to death.
Like a tear in my eye, we'll remember him. And now serious stuff. As mentioned, Marty Marinovich is with me now, is President of the Waitakere Grey Power Association and the Deputy Zone Director for Grey Power Auckland Region. A good son of the West, as I mentioned, a well-known and forthright figure in that part of the world. So welcome, Marty.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, we'll start by talking rubbish, but before we do, with a name like Marinovich, you're obviously not Irish. More likely part of the Richdelly heritage of the West. How long have your family been here?
My grandfather came out in 1910, and his two brothers came out before him, leaving their mother behind in the village of Podgora in Dalmatia with her two daughters. And she was a lady that grew olives and sold olives to supplement the family.
Oh, okay.
Way back in the 1890s. And we've been living, I still live on the same piece of family land that was acquired in about 1903. And the other day I had some men bring a new washing machine in, and the Indian guy just about fell over when I told him I'd lived there that length of time on the same piece of land.
Oh, that is incredible. So do you still have family?
I've still got distant relatives. I've got a cousin's wife that's still over there that I correspond on Facebook with, and it's lovely, and I can speak the language and write the language, so I can write if I need to, and my Facebook messages are often in Croatian.
Oh, okay.
And then she writes back in English. Or I write in English and she writes back in Croatian.
Is that...
So I learnt when I was a child from my grandparents.
Is that common in the Dalmatian
community? Not. Well, I was the only one in my family, and I've got two sisters that learnt how to speak and write. My youngest sister can understand it, and the other one can understand it, but that's about all. But it depends on your will to learn.
Yes, I was intrigued, you know, just with the new comment, I think, the other day with the national government talking about introducing, I think, up to 10 languages in primary schools.
Yeah.
Do you think there'd be a demand for the Croatian language?
I don't think there would be a big demand, no. Yeah. There'd be more of a demand, I would think, for Mandarin.
Yep.
Where we're going to do most of our training.
No, I think that was the point of the exercise, but yeah. Okay, well, back to business. You'll be aware that we, at our Grape Hour meeting, had a presentation from Penny Hulse, Councillor Penny Hulse, and two of her officers from Council on the new round of bins being introduced for the regular rubbish. We already have the recycling bins. With the experience we had on the shore with the original distribution of the huge recycling bins, I have some fears about what's coming up. I think it's a bit different in various parts of the cities. How does it work now in the West?
Well, we have the orange rubbish bags currently, and then on the from the week beginning the 2nd of October, you move to the old blue bins, which they are repurposing. That was the word they used right at the beginning. So they'll be brought back into circulation, and they will take the equivalent, they reckon, of two orange rubbish sacks. But that's varied according to the boffin from the council the other day. He said it'll take only 20% extra, I think, from what he had to say. Plus, you'll have to put a tag on your bin, which is going to be like one of those tags that's on the airline bags.
Oh, okay, because it's intriguing.
Like that, yeah.
When he did have the bin...
$3.80, I think, for the tag.
Oh, is that right? I missed that bit too.
Yeah, $3.80 for the tag to put on your bin.
Well, I'm half deaf, as you well know, but I mean, he had the bin there, and I would have thought, from my experience with the rubbish bins, you'd take a lot more than two bags. Were they 60 litres and 40 litres?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought 2 and 20% more. That's how I worked it out. I worked it out that way.
Because you normally, of course, you put your rubbish in your little plastic bag you bring in the supermarket, so it all packs down.
But, Bill, the problem we have with our elderly is the old ladies who go and freeze the stuff, the bones and the bits and pieces, and put them in the freezer, and they bring them out and think, oh, I'm going to make some soup.
Well, and that's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Yes.
I think
the rubbish problem, I don't know whether there was a fellow out our way who had a letter in the Herald, and he said, why fix what isn't broken? Well, I tend to agree to quite an extent, but then we've been forced into it, and one of our other presidents from Auckland virtually spoke on that at the zone meeting.
Well, I didn't realise, but the West is obviously exactly the same as the North Shore.
It is.
So we have the orange bags, because we have the situation over there that came up at our own meeting, and was touched on at the Grey Power meeting, where there's a competitor with the yellow bags. I think it's EnviroWaste.
Yes.
And, of course, Penny was talking about that and saying, well, if the council, we do a lot more.
Do they get... I'm sure the figure I heard mentioned was 57... They have 50%... 43% of the coverage of the shore.
Well, they had 53%, the council only having 47%.
Well, EnviroWaste currently, yesterday and yesterday's Western Leader had a full-page ad, but it's only going to take in Tiatutu Peninsula in that part, not us further out west.
Oh, okay.
Poaching. They're looking for more customers.
So cherry-picking a bit.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Well, that raised an interesting point, because I think we had the situation on the shore with the big rubbish bins when they first came, that the council didn't publicise that they had small ones. And in fact, we had a problem with a lot of older ladies ringing up and saying, look, I can't handle it. I think they were 260 litres.
Yeah, they are.
I had trouble with it.
They can, I think, Bill, they can get the, if they ring the council, they can even get smaller bins for their rubbish.
Yeah, well, that's...
He did. The fella from the council did say
oh,
that.
Oh, okay. Right. So that's available. So is it?
Yeah.
And because the original concept they had with the rubbish, because they did come and consult with Great Power last year, and we pointed out a lot of these difficulties to them, but they did say then that the... that the domestic rubbish would be paid for on weight. They'd be measured somehow when they
were
lifted.
Right. That's in the initial phases, and then now. But really, have they consulted us? They haven't consulted us. Council, as usual, I think, has insulted us.
Well, that's probably right.
They have not consulted us over the rubbish. They have said, this is what you're going to have, and this is going to sort the whole problem out. But... then inside your big bin, how many litres it is, 120 litres, if you put your rubbish in there and there's only one person and it takes you a month to fill it, the putrefaction of it is going to be so huge in the heat of summer that, then Penny says, doesn't matter, there's a lid on it. Yeah, very well. There may be a lid, but the stench...
Yeah.
For one person living on their own, it's a problem.
Well, and that was the issue that brought up at the council, because the other problem we had, a lot of people living in units having another bin is a bit of a problem, and also just the fact of getting them to the gate.
If there's sort of 16 or 17 units or something, or, you know, like that, a complex, there'll be 17 bins.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I see that point. That's,
yeah. Yeah, because the other point that we did make, I think, which is one of those Murphy's Law things, with the old North Shore bins we had, which are presumably the same, the blue ones with the yellow lids, their handle was of a size that you could put it over your tow bar on your car.
Right,
for people living in places like the East Coast Bays. Where
and up in the Waiatarua and patches like up our way.
You could tow them up the drive.
They can't now.
But now the new bins were just that fraction too small.
They can't tow them.
So hopefully, that we did mention that, and they might take that on board.
We did.
Because the other issue, I think, that came up was the fact that they've got a third bin coming.
Yes.
Which is for the food scraps that can be composted.
That's right.
So it'll be very interesting to see how it walks out, because I think that my feeling is they might have to review it, because I think the economics are such, if the people with the yellow bags continue, they're going to lose an awful lot of business. I mean, the council.
Yes, they are.
Because the bags are sort of much more convenient.
Well, I've got to admit, I was trolling through the leader yesterday, and when I saw it, I went to 0800, whatever it was, and I thought, ooh, it's only going to be $2.04, as opposed to $3.80.
How does that work?
A week.
Okay.
So if you fill it, you sort of put it out. So there's competition in the marketplace.
Yeah, I just missed the subtlety of that. What do the bags cost?
The bags, currently, I don't know, it's $2 something, aren't they?
And they'll be 60 litres.
So they're trying to cut in. They're going in cherry picking, as you said earlier.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that could be a problem with the council.
Yeah, it could be.
Okay, so one thing's going to be sure, it's going to be a little bit chaotic for a while, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
The other issue that we talked about, I think that you're quite concerned about, was the impact of the increase in pay for the living wage concept for the rest home workers, which I don't think anybody would disagree with, but I think what wasn't clear in the actual announcement of that only applied to the subsidised sort of rest homes, I presume financed through the district health board, so that people in other homes that didn't get the subsidy would have to pay the difference.
Well,
do you know the background to that?
Well, I had a letter back from the Minister of Health, Jonathan Coleman, and it stated quite unequivocally that there are 11,070 people throughout New Zealand who are over the asset threshold, which is approximately $225,000. And if they're staying in a rest home or a hospital facility, They had an average increase this year of 9.9%, which is catastrophic, to say the least. The families of the 11,000 have got to find the money from... So I would say it's a wealth tax in hiding.
Yeah, well, have you any idea what it actually costs?
They're charging out around about $11,063 or $1,100 a week for non-subsidised. That's quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
And they're all on super. So the subsidised ones, their fee would have gone up to 1.1%, whatever the super had gone up. But previous to that, having my mum in the rest home and then in the hospital at out in West Auckland, the fee, they charged the fees of, the fees went up. I mean, if you went into the hospital part, then the district health board contributes, so you don't have to pay that extra. So there is something there for those that have worked hard and saved. So if you work hard and save and you end up in the rest home facility at the finish, they've got the needle out and they're sucking the blood.
Oh, that sounds a bit harsh.
No, I'm saying it harshly because I just saw a lady on our way down to the program this morning and she's tied up with the Selwyn Foundation, and she pointed me to the fact that it's very expensive to run a rest home facility or hospital, and I would imagine it would be.
Right.
Yeah,
I can fully understand that.
Yeah, the care workers, we at Grey Power fully recognise the fact that the aged care workers needed a better pay structure, and over the next $2 billion has been given by the government, $500 million this year and $500 million over the next 3 years to increase their pay. We fully support that. But if the rest homes and the larger outfits, like the privately run outfits, and I better not mention any names, and I won't, but they, it seems to look like they're taking the figure from the money from the district health board and adding it on.
Oh, okay. Because the other issue that's come up is like we had the Coe Preston home closing down after 73 years, and that brought up a comment from one of our people that said, "Okay, there are about 30 others in New Zealand closing down. The ones that were run by the I suppose you'd call them charitable organisations or churches or whatever." So there must be an issue coming.
Well,
up.
Our board, Roy Reid and Joe. What's her name down in...
Joe Miller
down in Dunedin. They work on both areas of that. Like, Joe's busy doing the home care.
Right.
And that's another important thing, the home care side. Keep people at home as long as you can so they don't end up in the rest home facility.
Okay, so it seems like there'll be quite a lot of...
there's a lot that's happening down country, because that's why I've sort of keep in touch with... especially Joe, she's very up with all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, because, I mean, the ageing population's increasing pretty rapidly too.
And they can't, a lot of these trusts can't manage just the cost of keeping the person. Well, you would think, you know, they don't need much food, but it's the care. It's the staff, the experienced staff. That's the important, that's the thing. You want to put your parent in a place where they have good staff.
Oh, I think that's critical.
Yeah, most critical, Bill.
Oh, that'll be something to watch fairly closely, because I think the other issue that's arising, which we'll talk about another day, is just the question of social housing for seniors. You know, the sort of the Auckland Council, for example, have said they're not, they've got 1,412 units, but they're not, they'll keep that number, but there's no plans to actually increase them. And the thing that concerns me with the Grey Power hat on is the fact they're taking some of those blocks of land that have got the units on them and redeveloping them, keeping the same number of units, a smaller space, and selling off the rest of the land to help out. So anyway, we're getting to the end of our time.
Out west there, where Wiltshire Crescent will...
Yeah, well,
that's the Council of Pānuku.
That's a critical one.
Yeah, build some there for the elderly.
Okay, well, thanks, Matty. You've got to wind up now, so that's it for the day. So next time we get together, the dust will have settled anyway, and we'll have a new government and possibly a new Prime Minister. Our pregnant mums may be getting free dental care, and we might even have a few dollars and a commitment to restore the Simon Street Cemetery. Our senior community will probably get some things out of the lolly scramble, but come what may, there'll still be a whole pile of problems and issues for the senior community to be dealt with and brought to the attention of the government and council. And that's what Grey Power is all about. So, as you say, we're very active in this particular area. You do, in fact, have a federation board that looks very closely at these matters and deals directly with the government. In our Auckland region, we tend to sort of be dealing more with the council, but at the same time, we have a situation like I have on the North Shore, where our Grey Power area, North Shore area, covers four electorates now. Four MPs are all cabinet ministers, including the Minister of Health, Jonathan Coleman, the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, Maggie Barry. Paula Bennett now has got a curious electorate, which is half in the west and half on the North Shore, the Deputy Prime Minister. And the other one is a just retired Foreign Minister, Murray McCulley. So we'll be in for a change in any event. And Grey Power works very closely with the MPs on the local basis to supplement the efforts that are being made by our Federation people when they go to Parliament three or four times a year in Wellington. So we'll wind up now with a little gentle recognition of our Minister for Arts, Culture and Heritage as an encouragement to be kindly to the memory of her fellow Irish compatriot of long ago, Captain Willie Hobson from Wicklow. So thanks for listening. Bye for now. When we have Foster and Alan singing Maggie.
I wander today to the hills, Maggie, to watch the scene below. The creek and the creaking old mill, Maggie, as we used to long, long ago. The green grove is gone from the hills, Maggie, where first the daisies sprung. The creaking old mill is still, Maggie, since you and I were young. Oh, they say that I'm feeble with age, Maggie. My steps are much slower than them. My face is a well-written page, Maggie, and time all alone the pen. They say we have outlived our time, Maggie, as dated as songs that we've sung. But to me, you're as fair as you were when you and I were young. They say songs that we've sung, but to me you're as fair as you were, Maggie, when you and I were young, when you and
together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note Senior Focus is one word.